Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. Well, folks, today I have a very special guest. This is actually an interview that I recorded a couple of months ago, and there are some kind of extenuating circumstances which arose that did not permit me to release the audio. And I'll kind of get into that story right now, and we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll jump into the interview and the discussion, and then we'll have a few closing remarks. So as you might remember, a couple of months ago, I took my oldest daughter. I shouldn't say I took her. I accompanied her across the country to do some work in an internship out there with, it's not Department of Forestry, but it's one of the, BLM, Bureau of Land Management, went crystal clear on that one. So Bureau of Land Management, forestry, agriculture, like one of those types of things, internships out in Wyoming. And she just didn't want to make the drive cross country by herself. I, as a father, did not want to send my little baby across the country all by herself. So we decided to make a little road trip together, had a lot of fun. It was really cool. While we were planning for this trip, we had just decided, hey, why don't you just drop me at the Denver airport and you can continue those last 2.5-3 hours on your own. And I was going to go ahead and fly to Salt Lake City, Utah to meet up with my uncle. He's living out there. Just spend a couple of days with him. I was only, I think, an hour, 40-minute flight away. Why not go catch up with the uncle and see what's new with him? So he and I are hanging out. We go for a ride, and he's a big, big fan of, if you live out there, you're familiar with the area. It's near the Alta and Snowbird ski resorts, like the Little Cottonwood Canyon and the Big Cottonwood Canyon. Really, really beautiful area out there. If you've never been there and never had the chance to get out west, it's definitely a sight to behold. And we were driving around through the mountains and just checking some things out. And we're rolling down the road, and I glance to the right, and I see this just random sign that says, honey. And I'm like, well, that's a little random. But then you drive up about another 300 feet or so, and there's a truck on the side of the road. There's a guy selling honey. So I go up, and we just start chatting with him. I'm like, hey, how's it going, man? And, what you got here? And he starts talking a little bit and telling us about, what he's got and where all the different honeys come from that he's offering, and kind of telling his story and his background. And I kind of tell him a little bit about me, and we start chatting it up. So it turns out that this guy is a former Marine. And, even though, anybody who's in the military, it's kind of funny. Like when you're on active duty, you have these certain rivalries between the branches. And then, of course, I'm a big fan of the Navy 364 days a year. But, when that Army-Navy game rolls around, it's a little bit of a different ball game. But once you get past, the immature, childish aspects of things, we're all on the same team. We pretty much get it. So he and I kind of clicked right away, had a really good conversation on the side of the road. And I said, listen, man, why don't you jump on the podcast with us sometime? Chat, tell us your story. Tell us what's going on. He's like, hey, I'd love to do that. Let's make it happen. So I touch base with him. I kind of do a little bit of a pre-call, and I'm like, hey, man, you got a few minutes to chat. We get on the phone, and we talked for an hour and a half. And I said, Benny, his name is Benny. And I said, Benny, if I had just hit record at the beginning of this phone call, man, we'd be done. But I caught up with him a couple of days later, and we did the same thing again. We were trying to get a schedule locked down, and next thing you know, it's an hour and a half. So finally, I caught up with him one morning, and He was on the road. This guy just doesn't stop. He's got energy like I've never seen before. And the day that he and I were catching up, he's like, look, I got to run out and catch this swarm. But, we can kind of go back and forth and chat in between things. So he goes out and I'm with him. I'm on the phone and he's catching this swarm and he's talking it up and going through things. And I'm like, well, Benny, we got to start recording one of these times. And he's like, yeah. Just let me finish with this thing. So he finishes up with the one, then we get on the phone, and then we got on the phone, and while he's going from point A to point B, we had about a half hour discussion. As we got there, he's like, hey, I want to just grab this, I think it was another swarm he was trying to catch. He says, hey, I want to grab this other swarm and we'll get back on the phone. Turns out he ended up getting tied up for the rest of the day, and we didn't get synced back up again. But I really want to catch up with Benny again, catch him on a Saturday. Well, the guy probably works 7 days a week, but catch him on a day where he's just taking it easy at the house. He can kick back and relax, not have a million things going on. But I wanted to get this out because it was a good discussion. It was fun. He's a smart guy. He's a cool dude. Again, man, really dedicated to the craft. And I just thought, you know, let's get this out to you. Let you take a listen to it. Tell me what you think. And then we'll try to revisit things with Benny later on and see if we can get him back on for a more detailed discussion. So without further ado, let's jump in here with our discussion with Benny the Beekeeper out in Sandy, Utah.
Benny, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing all right, man. Appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today. So if you would, man, just take a few minutes and give us a little bit of background on yourself, man. Like how you, you know, where you're from, how you got started in beekeeping, anything you want to share. Take as much time as you like.
All right. My name is Benny B, Benny Benavides. I'm a beekeeper out of Sandy, Utah. I started beekeeping when I was a kid in the Boy Scout. My grandfather used it as how to kind of take care of insects. And I really took to it really quick when I was 13 years old. I decided it was time for me to get my own beehives, and I've never turned back. I've loved it since. So I was all the way up to 50 beehives by the time I reached 18 years old. But we were dealing back then in 1999 and 2000 with the hive collapse disorder, where colonies were just collapsing all around America, and people were really freaking out about the beekeeping industry. So I actually ended up selling off all of my hives to another fellow beekeeper, Lee Knight, here in Utah, and joined the Marine Corps. And since then, once got out of active duty, I've come back into beekeeping again.
Okay, so you're doing beekeeping full time then. This is your 100% every day of the week?
It is. I live, breathe, and eat nothing but honeybees and honey all day, every day.
Well, so folks, just so you know that Benny is telling the truth here. So I've been on the phone with him on and off for a couple hours now, and he's been shocked by an electric fence today. He has already captured a swarm, and I think he's on his way to go catch another one. Is that right?
That's correct.
Outstanding. Awesome. Well, hey, man, I kind of gave the intro earlier about how we met up on the side of the road out there when I was taking a trip. But, you know, in one of our first discussions, you mentioned something that resonated with me, and I wanted to share that with everybody else, because I think it's one thing like when I say something, but it's kind of like, yeah, is this guy really telling the truth? Is this really as serious as he says it is? But you brought up a point specifically about hobbyist beekeepers and kind of a commitment to the trade. Can you take a few minutes and just kind of run through your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. So what we were talking about back then was realistically about what beekeeping should mean to you if you're interested in getting into beekeeping. A lot of people see honeybees and they're in love with them. They love what they do for us. They love what they do for the country and for the plants and our ecosystem. They say, hey, I want to be a beekeeper. I want to get a hive in my backyard. And I'm a firm believer, and I'm an advocate for this, is I don't think that kind of person should be a beekeeper. I think if you're really interested in being a beekeeper, you better want to eat, breathe, live, sleep, dream honeybees. You better be willing to think that every day of the week you have something to do with the honeybees. I know I'm not saying get into your beehive every single day of the week, but I'm saying if you're really going to be a beekeeper, you should be thinking about those bees 360 a year. Beekeeping is not meant to be something that you just put in your backyard and let it self-manage itself. These bees, yes, they can manage themselves to a small degree, but the Langstroth hive was not created for honeybees to manage themselves. It was created for the sole purpose of honeybees having the ability to have exponential growth in a set, concise space meant to allow them to basically build honey on a large scale. But nature doesn't have these types of cavities available for honeybees just on the fly. They don't just exist. I mean, there are some caves that provide that kind of a space, but not many. So I'm a firm believer that if you're going to be in beekeeping, you need to be willing to be actively dealing with those honeybees, actively inspecting your hives, actively looking for swarms, and constantly on a program. Yeah, you know, you need to be willing to do all the knowledge seeking, all of the learning, and keep doing the legwork that is involved to really truly keep your bees alive and to be a part of the system and not a part of the problem.
Yeah, I think that's a great explanation. You know, when I think about it, from a lot of different angles and perspectives. I think a lot of people almost look at it like a goldfish. You know, like you buy the little goldfish container thing that you get from the fair or whatever it is. You put the fish in there and you walk by every now and then you look over and go, hey, have you seen my goldfish? You know, if you take that kind of approach with honeybees, it doesn't just impact you. It impacts, of course, your bees, then the bees that end up drifting and ending up around other bees throughout your community in the area. I mean, you know, what have you seen and what kind of challenges have you faced in dealing with, you know, IPM, dealing with pests and pest management and things like that out there in Utah?
Utah is kind of an interesting landscape, and funny that you should mention that. I've seen all manner of things here. Utahns, they really are enterprising. They like to listen to their flag and their state motto, and they like to say, we are all hard workers and we can do anything we want to do. And so many Utahns are entrepreneurs, they're enterprising, they're do-it-yourselfers, kind of, you know, run their own little garden in their backyard. And so they all think they can all be a hobbyist beekeeper. Well, let me tell you, that's the reason we have so many problems in Utah. Utah is considered the second hardest state in America to keep bees. And it's not just because of the season, not because we have four seasons, it's because of the hobbyist beekeepers. The hobbyist beekeepers tend to, you know, they tend to allow their hives to do certain things that hives shouldn't do unless they're in the wild or unless they're in a large scale commercial beekeeping operation that doesn't have anywhere for those hives to go if they swarm. You know, big fields, big areas where, you know, it's easier for the beekeeper to spot these beehives and put them into a box. But in these neighborhoods, you get these hives that are swarming. They're going into all the different nooks and crannies. They're going into old boxes. We get what's called the Varroa bomb that happens all the time to beekeepers in Utah especially. And it's where a hobbyist beekeeper just either let their hive swarm into a nook and cranny where it took some of those Varroa mites with it, and then it became a Varroa bomb to the area. And when those Varroa mites grew into critical numbers, then that hive just dies. It literally dies. It absconds. All those bees go into everybody else's beehive, and they bring those mites with them into every hive nearby. So then all your yards could be looking really nice, and all of a sudden one day you'll just see a spike in Varroa mites hit your yard, and you have to move to your integrated pest management program. Otherwise, you become the problem too. And that's where I come back to that same concept, all in or not in at all. The beekeeping industry should be as it was in the past, where there are a few beekeepers far in between and not a bunch of these hobbyists that are watching YouTube and thinking they know how to keep bees. If you're going to be a beekeeper, just really, really stay with it or don't at all. If you're going to get into beekeeping, going to these, you know, meetings in your local bee clubs is really important. You can start learning some of these problems we can have before you start buying equipment. Take, for instance, today I had a message come through on my phone from another fellow commercial beekeeper, and with a whole bunch of pallets worth of commercial boxes that have been run for a while. And for the average hobby beekeeper, they would say, hey, yeah, jump on it. Let's get it. Well, that's not always a good choice. I chose to say, yes, I'm interested, and here's my reason. I don't want those boxes going to the next guy who doesn't know how to handle or manage them. I'd rather pick through and pick every single box that could be useful, using an old pair of gloves I have, not using a new pair of gloves, not touching a single box with a single hive tool, and going through every single box without my bee suit on, with just a pair of really, really old gloves that I'm ready to throw away or boil. Picking everything I'm going to keep, stacking it all up, putting it all on the pallet, and bringing it all over to a yard I have that has no bees, has two 55-gallon drums, filled full of water with sodium hydroxide, or lye as it's called, and I'm going to boil all of them. I'm going to break out every single foundation. I'm going to boil every single box, every frame, until there isn't a single piece of equipment that I got from this lot that hasn't been completely boiled for 20 minutes, 5 minutes longer than necessary, to make sure that I'm killing off all of those potential foul brood spores. As science has shown, those spores can live over 50 years. So why did those hives get abandoned? Why did those foxes get left behind? Do we know? Are those dead out frames or do we not know? Do those frames have foul brood? Has that foul brood dried up because those frames have been sitting for so long and it's just a dry bunch of frames that look like, you know, maybe they were dead outs over the wintertime. We don't know. So I'm jumping on it because I know I'll be able to take every single one of them, clean them all, and put every one that I clean and that I repair, put them all back into service. But I wouldn't recommend that to the average beekeeper. Not very many people know about how bad foul brood is. Probably one of the worst things being that it could destroy your entire livelihood. It can get all over your suit, all over your glove, your tools, your brushes, your smoker. It could just end up contaminating all of your yard, all of your equipment, and before long, you're losing massive amounts of your bees. There's nothing you can do with that. You can't do anything with the honey. You can't do anything with the bees. It's just a complete total loss of the bees and the honey and all the wax. So, yeah, I would say we face a lot of problems here in Utah that come from a combination of abandoned equipment and hobbyist beekeepers that have failed because of problems with burrow mite or foul brood.
As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store. When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi-enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So that's great info. You know, you touched on several points that, that made a lot of sense. And one of them being quality of beekeepers, you know, quality of hobbyists versus the quantity. I think that's critical. You know, one thing that I always talk to people about, people say, hey, look, I'm thinking about getting into beekeeping. How much money is it going to take? I mean, is it pretty expensive to get into? And I always tell people, you know, you can spend as much or as little as you want. But the problem is if you're just spending a little, people often focus on things kind of almost in the inverse order. They say, well, how much do my bees cost? Well, then how much is the box that the bees go in cost? And they kind of start working their way back. I like to kind of front load that and say, let's start with what, in my opinion, is the most important thing, which is how much is it going to cost me to treat for Varroa for one colony? If I have 5 colonies, 10 colonies, if I'm treating 3-4 times a year, whatever it might be, you got to have that IPM, or what we call integrated pest management. You've got to have that strategy in place and be thinking about that expense before you even put the first dollar towards buying the bees and the boxes.
I agree. I couldn't have said it better. When a hobbyist or when a human being comes up to my honey stand and asks me and says, you know, I was interested in getting a couple beehives. I was just thinking one or two in my yard. I usually always tell them, I say, how interested are you in keeping bees? And they say, well, I really want to get the honey and I really want them to pollinate in my yard. And I go, are you wanting to make sure you don't lose all your hives? Are you wanting to make sure you keep all your beehives? And they go, well, yeah, that's what I was thinking too. And I say, okay, well, I'd like to convince you that if you really want to be a beekeeper and you want to be all in and you want to do this and never have to worry about losing all of your hives, I want to convince you to settle on the number of 8. And they say, 8. And I say, yeah, I want you to think my first year, I'm going to buy 4 beehives. And they say, well, I really only think I only need 2. I don't think I really need 4. And I go, well, hear me out. I think you don't need just 4 beehives. I think you need 8 beehives worth of equipment, even though you probably only need to start out with like 4 beehives. And then they say, well, that might be too many for me. And I say, well, I recommend it. I recommend you put aside your tax return, $1,000, $8,000 worth of tax return, because you're going to need it. Put it into its own fund, call it the beekeeping fund. Yep, $8,000. About $1,000 per beehive. They say, well, you know, I found a cheap deal. You know, I can get this for this, this for that. And I say, well, all in all, between everything you're going to need to start off your beekeeping career, I still think you're going to need at least $5,000, at least $3,000 for the next year. So I recommend you try to save up closer to $4,000 to $8,000 before you even get started. But consider that that's about where you need to be at, somewhere between $4,000 and $8,000 in savings before you initiate your beekeeping career. And my numbers are pretty simple. It makes sense. Go ahead and try to find a beehive, full complete beehive on the market with a bottom board, a top board, an inner hive cover, a queen separator, inner hive feeder, or an exterior hive feeder, and 2 deep supers plus 2 additional deep supers. And try to pay less than $300. Good luck. Yep. You're going to be somewhere up there. And then go ahead and find yourself a package that's less than $140 or $150. Not going to happen. So you're going to be another $150. Now you're already over $550. Okay? Now you got corn syrup. Now you got what you're going to add to it, or sugar syrup, whatever you want to use, whatever feeding supplement you want to use in the spring and in the fall. Now you got to have a supplement to put in it. You don't want to give them just straight sugar, straight corn syrup. You want to give them something that has a few supplementals in it, whether it's bioactivator, whether it's Hive Alive or Honeybee Complete. You want to pick something that's going to give them a little bit more to their system than just nectar and water. Then on top of that, you want to have your treatment method. You want to have Apicin, Lumifos, Fluvinate, Check Mite. You want to have a little Formic Pro on hand. You want to have some oxalic acid on hand. You want to have a fumigator. You want to have a Varroa mite check container. You want to have a gallon of alcohol for doing alcohol washes. You want to have a big kind of a commercial kitchen pan that's about 8 inches deep and 22 inches long, I want to say, by 12 inches that you can shake a frame of bees into. There's a series of different things you're going to need just to get started. And you haven't even added your bee suit, your smoker. You haven't even added an extractor. You haven't even added some hive tools. You haven't added a decapping knife. You haven't added some extra containers for holding honey, some honey end gates. You haven't added some strainers, commercial grade strainers. You haven't added a method to handle your 5-gallon buckets if they crystallize. You haven't added a method to keep your bees insulated during the winter if necessary. There's so many different things that add into this picture that they just don't consider, that they really add up. And if you're not prepared for it, then good luck. Because if your hive gets overloaded with bees and you go into your hive and you notice that your hive is throwing a bunch of swarm cells, just knocking those swarm cells down isn't necessarily going to stop the swarm. And so I like to have that extra, you know, those extra beehives on hand in case I need to do what's called redneck nuking, where I take that beehive, I take those frames that have those queen cells on them that are already drawn out, that already have some, you know, some larvae in them, and I separate them all into a separate box and some of the bees with them. I put an extra box on that other box that was getting ready to swarm. I separate some of the honeycomb and I put a couple extra frames down where the honeycomb has been pulled from to kind of, you know, lighten the load inside of that beehive and make it so that beehive feels like it already swarmed. But it doesn't always work. Sometimes they'll still swarm even after that. So that's why I like to say, you know, have twice as many boxes as you have beehive just to start out your season. And even if you're going to be a hobbyist beekeeper, you might just end up selling off those other beehives once they have bees in them. But so what? Buy them again. Keep that equipment on hand.
Yeah, I think all those numbers that you gave are pretty accurate. You know, I've always told people at a minimum, start off with a pair, right? That way you have something as a basis of comparison. You can look at one, look at the other, see how closely things are. You may not know exactly what to look for, but you can at least tell that something's different. But the second piece to that is, like you said, having the spare equipment, because I remember year one for me, I'm like, okay, I'm going to do two. So I had two full sets of everything. And then I added my honey super and that was fine. And then I'm like, oh, wow, I might need to do a split. I had no hardware, right? So that's where having at least, I would tell people if you had three or four colonies, you probably want to have at least half the total numbers in duplicate. So if you had four total colonies, you want to have at least two extra. Or if you had eight, you want to have, you know, just figure the math on those. But I think your numbers are spot on. I mean, it's expensive. It's not the cheapest thing, which also goes back to what, you know, what I always say, what you just said. If you're a member of a bee club and you're getting information from them, they're not only good for information, you might also be able to talk to, you know, Bob the beekeeper over there and say, hey, Bob, do you by any chance have any extra hardware I could buy from you? I got this activity I didn't expect. Or, you know, having people around who maybe have extracting equipment. Yeah?
Yes and no. I would say as a hobbyist beekeeper, you shouldn't be trying to buy extra equipment left and right from other beekeepers. Because keep in mind, each time you buy used, you're potentially introducing yourself to thousands each time. It doesn't matter what equipment you're buying used. Remember, those spores can live anywhere for over 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
So if he extracted frames of honey and he didn't know what he was doing and he pulled frames of honey off of hives that were sweet and sour, and he had no clue why they were so sweet and sour and pungent and almost moldy sound smelling. And he thought to himself, wow, my bees just collected something weird. And so now you're getting ready to get a 20 frame radial extractor. And you're thinking to yourself like, oh yeah, it'll be totally fine. You know, I'll just get a used one. And then you go get a used one and you're using it and you're getting it all over your hands, getting it all over the frame. Well, now if that extractor has foulbrood spores in it, on it, around it, and those spores are only getting heated up to 115 to 135 degrees, depending on the beekeeper's, you know, brains in extracting, you know, then that those spores are perfectly viable. Those spores aren't reaching temperatures over 200 degrees. They're not, you know, there's no chance that those spores are dying off. So then you stick your frames in there, the honey gets all over them, the honey gets all sticky, the honey helps the spores to spread onto the frames. You get your frames extracted, now they're also inoculated with foulbrood, and now you're putting foulbrood in every one of your beehives because you got a piece of equipment that was used. So I don't always say get used. I say get used on things that are extremely expensive and go above and beyond to clean it. To clean it ridiculously clean. I mean, we're talking, get yourself a gallon of ammonia and clean that thing down with a gallon of ammonia before you start using it to extract. Or if you're as lucky as me and you got onto Amazon and you got yourself some sodium hydroxide and some lye, and you can just go ahead and whip up a batch anytime you want, and go ahead and whip up a batch and clean it with that. But how are you going to clean with that? Well, you're going to have to put it into a big barrel. You're going to have to get it boiling. And once you get it boiling, you're going to have to put it into there. You're going to have to keep it boiling even when it's in there in order to do the job, in order to know that it's 100% complete. So, you know, don't always consider other beekeepers as the best way to get the things you need. But if you could get them brand new from other beekeepers, then, you know, then I wouldn't be as wary. I would say try to get as much as you can as a hobbyist beekeeper, brand new, from one place or another. And then if you don't need the amount of bees you have or you're getting from those swarms, that's when the beekeeping club comes in handy. That's when having all those people that are also looking for beehives comes in handy. Because then you show up to the bee club and you say, well, I caught two extra swarms off my hives, had to do three splits, and now I've got five hives that I don't really need. I'm trying to keep four, you know, and now I have nine, you know, and they're like, nine? You're like, yeah, I had to really quickly, you know, go online and I had to purchase an extra bottom board and a top board and have it shipped to my house for $63 so that I could quickly get myself, you know, another hive going. And so, yeah, I'm just quickly trying to sell off these hives, you know, and that could work out because, like I said, if you plan to have enough hives that you don't lose all your hives every year, then you're already going to want to have more than just two beehives. Remember the statistic across America right now. Beekeepers across America lose an average of 40% of their beehives over the winter. 40%. And that statistic doesn't come out of thin air. So where's that statistic coming from? 40%. Remember, there's over 220,000 beekeepers in America. Out of 220,000 beekeepers in America, 200,000 of those beekeepers are hobbyist beekeepers. So that's where that number comes from. 200,000 people losing 40% of their hives every winter.
That's painful.
So why is that? But why is that? Why is there such a large number that the entire 2.6 million beehives in America average still says 40%? 40% of 2.6 million. So think about that. What's 40% of 2.6 million? Is that 560,000 colonies?
Man, I got to break out the calculator for that one.
Like 620,000 colonies, I think somewhere around that. So we're at like 600,000 colonies dying every winter. So why is that? The very reason why I say all in or not in at all. There's too many beekeepers that aren't following a program that manages those hives effectively. I mean, manages them effectively. That's where having those hive numbers that are slightly more ideal for problems or for longevity comes in handy. So like you have four beehives, then the best of the best could happen to you, and you could end out your winter and you could still have four beehives in the spring when you come back. But the worst of the worst could happen, and all four of those beehives could die over the winter time. And it could be for one reason or the next reason. You know, these things happen, and for a series of different reasons, and we don't always have the perfect answer for why they happen. But that's the reason why I say your power is in the numbers slightly better than not. You know, you get these people to really invest a large enough amount of money that they have enough hives that they can handle any situation. And then the worst of the worst that could happen is in the springtime, they have to spend $600 to get four more bee packages. It could happen. But, you know, if you're already prepared, if you've already invested all of that money and those resources into it, then each year you're going to be just fine. You're not going to be stressing over beekeeping. And I know way too many beekeepers that are always stressing. It blows my mind how many beekeepers are out there just super stressed trying to afford these things at the last moment.
Yeah. I mean,
have you noticed that?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where, God, there's so many areas you can go on with this, you know, left and right. And you have the individual personality dynamics, right? Like of just, you know, people who are just worry warts, you know, of who they are and their personality. But you put yourself in those situations, right? Like if you don't, it's kind of like not having a plan is having a plan to fail or something like that, you know, and it's that kind of thing. If you aren't having the forethought to say, this is what I think that the summer and the fall are going to look like, and then it's summer and the fall rolls around, you're like, okay, this is what I think we're going to be doing as we roll into the spring. And if you're not planning ahead and you're not thinking ahead, you're definitely falling behind in this industry. So, and your point on the used equipment, 100% valid. I was immediately, what came to mind is there was a guy at the B Club that used to sell all new stuff. And so this is the guy that I'm thinking of in my mind, but you're 100% correct on that. And, you know, foul brood, when you mentioned that, this is something that comes up periodically in our Discord room. We've got, you know, usually a couple of times a year, somebody comes up and says, hey, I've got this thing. Can you take a look? We had a young lady, I think that I want to say she was from Pennsylvania. And she just kind of got hit here recently, and we threw some notes over her way and some suggestions. You know, obviously at the capacity that you're doing things out there, well, how many colonies are you I know it's a moving target because you're always growing and things are changing, but how many colonies are you maintaining today?
So right now, I personally manage over 100 hives, and our group, I'm in a group of beekeepers. There's 9 of us, and we've got over 4,000 between all of us. So we're running a total of 4,000 hives, and during different stages and different times of the year, we kind of have to pool our resources and all kind of commit to the large body of beehives. But for the most part, you know, right now I've kept my numbers fairly low, but I'm starting to climb. Next year I'll bring my numbers up around 300, and the year after that close to about 800.
I'll tell you, man, it is not hard to grow. Once you decide, like we were talking about earlier with some of those cell builders, man, once you crank out, you know, 25 new queens a week, it's no joke as how quickly you can grow.
Very true. Especially, you know, on days like today where I started out my morning with the swarm and I'm on my way about 50 feet from walking in the entrance of another place and finding out where this swarm is at. And after that, I'll be done for the day. But I've already looked at all my hives that I wanted to look at today, 4 of my yards, and I can see another 8 hives that are ready to go into boxes from their nucleuses, and they don't go into hives fast enough, I'll have to split them again.
Nice.
I'll have
nice.
To split, you know, 3 or 4 of them and just slow down the rate of expansion. Otherwise they, you know, those things will swarm real fast, and then I just end up with more and more hives. So these, you know, once you're ready to start growing, you can grow, but it's not cheap. It's expensive. And you really have to have a plan before you jump into this kind of thing. And I've been beekeeping since I was a kid, and I've always noticed that once you get into larger numbers, the costs just start to grow exponentially, because then you're talking your big trucks, diesel trucks, flatbeds, cranes, rough terrain forklifts, trailers, enclosed trailers, heavy duty processing equipment. We've got a honey house that can process, 150 boxes every day if you want to of honey. And I mean, that's a lot of honey. A lot of honey. That's 1500 frames in a day. So, you know, these things don't come cheap. I think for putting that honey house together, I think we were $270,000 to build that honey house.
Wow.
And that was before COVID. So,
jeez.
You know, that was on the cheap end. I mean, in today's market, that would have cost $600,000. It's crazy. Yeah, I'm about to walk inside here and collect this swarm, but we can pick this up here in a second if you want. Let me just get my hands on this beehive, and then we can chat again here in a moment.
Yeah, we'll take a quick break and we'll resume here when you're done.
All right, everybody. Well, hey, look, I hope you enjoyed the discussion with Benny. I mean, I think he did a great job discussing some of the harsh realities of beekeeping, the importance of being committed to the craft. I've met a lot of people in beekeeping over the years. I don't think I've ever met somebody who's as passionate and dedicated to honeybees as Benny is. I mean, the guy, like he said during our discussion, he lives, breathes, eats, dreams honeybees. He, like, to me, is just the a great example of what you want everybody to be who's in beekeeping. Just he's all in. Like he said, all in or not in at all. If you'd like to hear more from Benny and you think it'd be cool to get him back on, let me know. Just, you know, shoot me a note somewhere, drop something in the Discord room, you know, leave a comment on one of our YouTube videos, and please check us out over there on YouTube. I'm trying to digitize everything. So if it is a early podcast, like literally from episode 1, I'm going to go back and re-record, not the audio portion, but I'm going to add a video to every single video from episode 1 all the way up to where I started doing video on them more recently. So there's a lot of new content coming out. I think I just put one out the other day about some of the things that, you know, top five things you're doing that might be killing your bees, how to really light a smoker. I've done joking smoker lighting videos, but I actually have a real video out there, how to truly light a smoker the real way. There's just a ton of stuff out there to check out. And, you know, obviously if you drop a like and a subscribe, that certainly helps me out in my journey to do this for you full time. But as I've mentioned before many times, you can always drop me an email. It's jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's newbees.com. And I think that is all that I have for you today. So everybody, please take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.